doubt. You know, some people think that's a sort of weak word, but actually it's the most powerful tool in politics. If you can create doubt in someone's mind, you've got them. Absolutely. So when a new person says, "Oh, the Prime Minister said my first speech was really good," if you half chuckle and say, "Did he say that, did he? Really?" You can count the seconds before they come back, grab you on the arm and say, "Don't you think he meant it?" Doubt is a killer. But how does that differ from ambiguity? Ambiguity's another matter. And it's very important at work that we understand ambiguity. We're not machines that just go, yes, no, one, two, three, four, there's the equation, it's all done. Daily, we're required to face different situations about which we do not know everything and we have to make decisions. So, as work gets more ambiguous, are our younger workers equipped for it? Peter O'Connor, Associate Professor, Business and Management at the Queensland University of Technology, with Karen Becker, Professor of Management at the University of the Sunshine Coast, have written an article. As work gets more ambiguous, younger generations may be less equipped for it. Can they stand it? I don't know. Peter O'Connor, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, are they a bunch of princesses that can't stand doubt and ambiguity? Even though they're a bit different, doubt and ambiguity.
Well, look, I suppose princesses is a fairly strong word, but it is a word that that some have used, or some have used a range of not-so-nice words, which I don't think is quite fair because we can't really blame a generation for what we have essentially done to them. I guess we'll get to that later. But yes, what we found quite strongly in our research is that younger people, and this is particularly Generation Y and Generation Z, so people below 37 and below 24 in particular, are much less comfortable with ambiguity than older generations.
Are you sure that it's not a function of just being that age? In other words, people in the older generations, did they have the same doubt when they were younger, or dislike for ambiguity when they were younger? And in other words, do we get better at it as we get older?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question. And I think there are two possibilities. The first possibility is the one you just mentioned. Perhaps it is simply the fact that as people get older, they become more comfortable with ambiguity. They experience life events. They go through a range of experience that makes them more tolerant of ambiguity as they age. And there is some reason to believe that that is correct. We know that people become more emotionally stable as they get older, and they also become more conscientious. So it's possible that the same is true for tolerance of ambiguity. There is a second possibility, and this is the one that I'm probably more fond of, and that's that these generational differences that we have detected are actually here to stay, or at least largely here to stay. I still believe younger people will get better as they get older, but there are some fundamental differences in how young people grew up today with how young people grew up 30 or 40 years ago.
So they're starting at a lower base point.
Yes, that's correct. And what I think is happening, and what I think this actually reflects, is the fact that over time, we've removed ambiguity from the environment of young people. And this is quite counterintuitive, I think, because there is more technology today than there was previously. Younger people have this lower attention span, so they are seeking out new things. But when you think about the purpose of technology, it's to solve problems. And if technology is effectively doing this in the personal lives of young people, it's solving their problems for them and making life essentially less ambiguous. To give you an example, Google Maps, it removes ambiguity about how to get to places and what time we'll get there.
Absolutely.
We walk around with these smartphones in our pockets, and they essentially can give us answers to most questions we could possibly ask. This wasn't the case 50 years ago or even 30 years ago.
Well, an example of that would be Shazam, you know, where you can discover the title of songs. Years ago, if you said, "Now, what was that song that went, you know, la-da-da," or you hear a bit of a song and you can't hear all of it, you could have a discussion with a group of people for 5 minutes, 10 minutes maybe, yes, working out what the song is. Now, you just whack on Shazam and there you go. The answer's there for you.
Exactly. I recall having many of these conversations myself with my friends, trying to figure things out, and we're going back and forth, telling stories, and this is just not necessarily. We don't have to deal with many forms of ambiguity in our personal lives because technology has really evolved to provide us with the answers to a lot of the problems that we have.
I'm talking with Peter O'Connor, Associate Professor, Business and Management at QUT, and we're talking about ambiguity and whether the younger generation are exposed enough to it and therefore whether they can handle it in real life. Now, you mentioned travel as being good for people to learn how to creatively manage or navigate ambiguity. It must be a little bit of a counterpoint to young people using all these apps. I mean, you know, I don't think you can buy a road map at the servo anymore. Everyone expects you've got Google Maps, but they do travel a lot more. So one might have thought that would teach them how to handle ambiguity. When you go to a foreign country, there's lots of it.
Yeah, look, that's a really good point. And I think it comes down to how people travel. So if they travel with their technology, with Google Translate on an organised tour, it's not going to offer them very much benefit. But if they, for example, take a gap year, which is, I think, is one thing that is really good for the character development of people. If they take a gap year and immerse themselves in a foreign culture, expose themselves to a language that they're not familiar with, this is extreme levels of ambiguity. And they're going to need to become comfortable with it fast, and they're going to need to figure out ways to adapt to their new environments. So I see this as an extreme form of life education that people aren't getting in universities that will actually set them up somewhat for work.
Mm. Have you read Jonathan Haidt's work, The Coddling of the American Mind?
Yes, I have. And I think Jonathan Haidt and his co-author, Greg Lukianhoff's explanation for these types of things is very accurate.
What do you think's particular about Haidt and Lukianhoff's work in terms of the coddling of young children?
Well, Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianhoff focus primarily on resilience as well as political correctness that's increasing in young adults. But what they argue is that young people are more and more being brought up by overprotective parents. And so the title of their book is The Coddling of the American Mind, How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure. So whilst we mean well in overprotecting our children, often this can have negative consequences for their psychological development. If we remove ambiguity from their environment by overprotecting them, we are creating young people and ultimately young adults with less ability to tolerate ambiguity when they do come across it.
Mm. It is hard. It must be hard for parents. You know, I have a niece who's got three kids, so I've got three great nieces. And we were talking the other day and she said how she'd let the second to youngest get out of her side at a shopping centre. Not far. And she sort of can't help but look and peer around the corner to make sure she's okay. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's terrified there's some weirdo that's going to snatch your kid.
Yeah.
But she knows that she has to allow the children to develop. So I think she gave her some money and said, go and buy a newspaper. She knew where she was going and she could watch her, but she found it quite traumatic. So often parents do this because, not always because they're the pushy parent that wants their child to be a genius, you know, those terrible people. Often it's just they, you know, it's genuine care for their children and a genuine fear about the weirdos that are out there that leads to mollycoddled children. I get it. You know, it's very hard for parents, I think.
Absolutely. And like I said, we have good intentions. And one of the reasons these things are happening is because of news coverage and social media coverage, whereby these abductions are extremely rare. But because we're exposed to them, all these rare events daily on news channels, we develop the belief that they're more common than they actually are. And we adjust our behavior accordingly. So it's completely understandable why parents are more protective than they used to be, even though it's not always in the best interest of their child.
Indeed. Peter O'Connor, Associate Professor of Business and Management at QUT, thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, it's a pleasure.